This year's Winter Olympic Games take place in Beijing. The opening ceremony is just over a week away. Now, traditionally, these events bring a lot of political goodwill, pomp and circumstance, a vice president waving from the stands. But not this time around. The U.S. and several other countries have announced their diplomats won't be attending the Games over China's record of human rights abuses. Quick reminder, China is committing genocide against the Uyghurs and other Muslim groups in the northwestern province of Xinjiang. The country has brutally crushed democratic movements in Hong Kong, and it continues Orwellian censorship of the press and its own citizens online. These diplomatic boycotts, however, skip over arguably the most important part of the Winter Games. That'd be athletes and coaches and, you know, television coverage. That leaves audiences with a decision to make, to watch or not to watch the Beijing Olympics. That question is even more complex when you have a personal connection to the sport, the athletes, or the games themselves. So today, we're talking to a few people who are wrestling with that decision for themselves, starting with Seattle's Granite Curling Club. That's where our supervising producer on Soundside, Sarah Leibovitz, went for a visit.
I love to slide. I go fast down the ice and slide down to the hack. It's a feeling of euphoria. You make six shots and five of them are bad, but one is so good and you're like, I've got this. I know how to do this.
Oh my gosh, John. John!
And when you love the sport like we love the sport, none of it is work. It's just so much fun. I think a skier would tell you the same thing. I think that when you find a sport or you find something that you're passionate about, you just love to do it no matter what. That's what curling is for Phil and I. Another one of our friends, her name is Vicky Persinger. She's a friend of ours out of Alaska. She is a curler going to the Olympics for the very first time. Is there politics that are associated with it? Sure. But am I going to spend time thinking about it? No. Is it going to keep me from watching? Absolutely not.
The Biden administration will not send any diplomatic or official representation to the Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics and Paralympic Games, given the PRC's ongoing genocide and crimes against humanity in Xinjiang and other human rights abuses.
There will be a diplomatic boycott of the Winter Olympics in Beijing. No ministers are expected to attend.
That is why we are announcing today that we will not be sending any diplomatic representation the Beijing Olympic Paralympic Games this winter.
It is not surprising, therefore, that Australian government officials would therefore not be going to China for those games. Australian athletes will, though. Australia's a great sporting nation, and I very much separate the issues of sport and these other political issues. They're issues between two governments.
Our athletes have been training for years, and they will continue to have all of our fullest support as they show the extraordinary success that Canada has at Winter Olympic Games.
The athletes on Team USA have our full support. We will be behind them 100% as we cheer them on from home. We will not be contributing to the fanfare of the Games.
I don't know what to think about this year's Olympic Games. I've always loved the Olympics, especially the less well-known sports. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with lugeing. And as I got older, it was triathlons, alpine skiing, curling. I love watching people push themselves and support each other, and that feeling of excitement when someone unexpected crosses the finish line first. But the Olympics aren't just about athletics. They're a political playing field. And I care about people suffering and political freedoms. But even the nations that are boycotting the Olympics politically this year say the same thing. We support the athletes. We're excited for the games. So where does that leave us? Where does that leave me? How do I decide if I should watch? I'm not the only person asking myself that question.
I hate the fact that it has, like, you are correct, it is political, and especially with it being in China right now and, you know, a lot of things about China that are, you know, kind of happening, and, you know, with the U.S. having a diplomatic boycott. I really, you know, I've been an Olympic fan since I was a kid, and I kind of view it as like this pure thing. So I try to like isolate the athletes. So the coach of the U.S. curling team is actually from our club, and he's actually leaving today to go down. Yeah, a friend of ours. And it's like, you know, I feel bad for him because he's experiencing the Olympics for the first time, and there will be no fans. His family can't go watch him. So I think, yeah, it's tough.
I also do the same thing. I try and isolate any of the politics associated with it from the actual sport. I watch the Olympics and I love to watch all the different sports because my deep admiration comes for the Olympians. I think about what those people did for the time that it took them to get to this place. But no, I don't spend time thinking about it, and I'm a lot like Phil in that I try to isolate it and take it back to what is the actual meaning of the Olympics. Hi, my name is Lori Markham. I'm the current president of the Granite Curling Club. I have been, I'm sneaking up on 2 years here. I'm originally from Canada, and we grow up curling. It's just inherent to part of being a Canadian.
I'm Phil Stryock. I am past president of the curling club. I've been curling for about 12 years, was on the board for seven of those 12 years. Same thing, curling has really just kind of gone from this esoteric thing I wanted to try once upon a time to something that kind of dominates my life from a social perspective. So I'm really excited to, you know, always talk about curling. So we get a pretty big boost in membership every 4 years through the Olympic cycle. I was actually part of the Vancouver class. So I came here, you know, sign up. We have what's called an open house or a learn to curl where, you know, you sign up, go out, get some basic instruction, curl for a couple hours. When I came, there was a line around the, you know, because it was the Olympics and because it was so close to Seattle, there was literally a line around the building to curl. It seems crazy. Like you're throwing a 42-pound rock down a sheet of ice, wearing a Teflon shoe while doing a lunge and carrying a broom with you at the time. Like, everyone thinks it's easier than it is. And it's, you can see the look on their face of, oh wow, this is actually hard. But yeah, it's inherently unnatural in a lot of ways. I didn't know what a hip flexor was 10 years ago, and I just know that mine hurts all the time. But yeah, it's kind of like, I would say it's kind of like golf where you can miss six shots in a row, but that one that you nail, that feeling is glorious. And then just, again, you're walking on ice, you're sweeping. There's so many things about it. But yeah, it's when you do it beautifully, watch an Olympics, it's kind of a glide. It's very graceful. When it's done poorly, it's not that. So
you're kind of playing against yourself in many ways. You practice because each time you're on the ice, you have an opportunity to get better. But it for me specifically, it's about beating myself.
So in Canada, curling is the sport that your parents and your grandparents played, and therefore young people don't think it's cool. It's the opposite for us. We have this hipster, esoteric, like, you know, kind of like I'm big on the concept of the third place. And to me, this is the ultimate third place. I call it the church basement with beer. So that whole idea of like during a pandemic, especially, there's so little sense of community right now. And I think everyone is craving that human interaction. And that's, my wife likes to say she fell in love with curlers before she fell in love with the sport of curling. And I think that, like, I mean, we you know, we were shut down for a year and a half, and I cannot emphasize enough how much I missed being here because it is, you know, it's very in the wintertime here. I used to say I had to play an ice sport to get over the Seattle freeze. But it's, yeah, there really is something magical about this place and something magical about this sport as well.
I could feel a little of that magic walking into the Granite Curling Club. It's like stepping into a time machine. Like I was going to curl with the Big Lebowski while he tells me all about this new carpet that really pulls the room together. Downstairs is the ice and an old school wooden check-in table with shoe grips by the door. Upstairs, there's a bar and a full kitchen. It's a spot for people to meet up after a game where traditionally the winning team buys the first round of drinks. So basically there's ice, specially conditioned for the sport, and some comfy chairs.
for being the place where the U.S. curling captain spends his time. It's not high tech or fancy. Phil says that's just the reality of curling. And that's part of why he'll watch it this year.
Like a lot of Olympic sports, no one is getting rich doing this sport. Like, these are people who have full-time jobs. They're doing this, you know, they're traveling on the, you know, they have a small amount of stipend that they have, but it's, they're doing it because of passion and love for the sport. And I think I try to like appreciate that as much as I can. And also, this is a sport where the level of intimacy between a casual curler and a professional curler, that line is very blurry. And like I said, I'm friends with a lot of the players who are going to the Olympics, which kind of blows my mind in a lot of ways.
And it's always going to be that way. It's going to be that way forever. The athletes, unfortunately, will always get the short end of this. If we let politics seep its way into these sports, it feels a lot like nobody cares about what the Olympics or what the athletes have done to get to that point. That makes me angry. Does it prevent me from watching? No. But when in the quiet moments when I'm by myself and I'm thinking about it, those are the things that I think about.
A lot of things have been politicized in the last year that I wouldn't think have been, yeah. Like, you wouldn't think that vaccinations would be a political issue, but here we are. So with regards to the Olympics, I don't know. I think, aside from the political part of it, I just think about the money part of it. You know, these cities and these municipalities commit to, you know, they're bidding and competing for something that may or may not, you know, they may lose billions of dollars of taxpayer money in some cases. I mean, it almost bankrupted the country of Greece as an example. So it's just so entrenched in the amount of money that, you know, that is at stake, frankly. So yeah, I don't see that changing anytime soon, but do I wish it would? Certainly. So we'll see.
This conversation seemed to keep circling one point. What does it mean to be a good person? Is it supporting your friends or creating a community? Or standing up and protesting against a global power? Can these things coexist? I think the frustrating thing is that there is no simple answer. I could pick just one and say, yes, that's it. That's the whole picture. But that wouldn't be true for someone else. So how do you decide what's best for you? What makes you a good person? And do you even get to be the person who decides that?
From The Good Place, where she was talking about how complicated morality is, she's like, there's a chicken sandwich place, and apparently if you eat their chicken, it means you're a bad person. And it's like, and that chicken is delicious. So it's like, I don't know, it's just, it's really, again, morality is complicated, the world is complicated, and just understanding like where everything fits together right now with COVID and with global warming and with every other problem that seems like to like, you know, compound itself day in and day out, it's a challenge for sure.
That's out every day to be hateful. So why do you want to set out every day to condemn people that are different or that have a difference of opinion? I find it very, very disheartening. I am distressed. I have moral distress on a daily basis because people just can't seem to be nice to each other.
I'll go back to the Chick-fil-A example. Yes, if I get Chick-fil-A, I feel like I want to eat it in my car and not take it into a liberal club in Seattle. But with the Olympics, I think that people love the Olympics so much that they're willing to overlook the political part of it. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, don't get me wrong. But yeah, I mean, the Olympics are just such a sacred thing that I think that we don't have a lot of good in the world right now, so don't take this one away from me too. I need this. So, I mean, there was, you know, I think there was some talk early on that the U.S. might actually boycott, and to me, that just punishes the athletes, and I think that's the reality of the situation.
And for me, no. I'm going to get Chick-fil-A, and I'm going to come and sit and eat it wherever I want to. But I don't have that, I don't have those, you know, those same inherent qualities that Phil has. That's not to say I'm a bad person. That's to say that I'm eating Chick-fil-A.
That was Lori Markham, Granite Curling Club president, and Phil Shyrock, former Granite Curling Club president, speaking to Soundside supervising producer Sarah Leibovitz. That is one perspective on this year's Olympics. But as Sarah said, there is no one right answer. So let's turn to someone with a personal connection to China and its human rights record. Alex Tang is a teacher at Seattle Community College. He attended the 2019 Hong Kong pro-democracy protests and organized supporting demonstrations here in Seattle.
My father actually is born and raised in Hong Kong, and I go visit family once a year in Hong Kong. So in 2019, I was there in November, and that's when the police were rampaging the city, and the university students kind of took the campus as their place of refuge and to defend democracy. And that happened around all the universities, like Chinese University of Hong Kong, Hong Kong University, Polytechnic University of Hong Kong. And I attended a protest, and it was really, really peaceful. And it was going over the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act that was just ratified, I believe, like a week before I landed in Hong Kong. And I was just listening to see what the protesters were saying. And they were really peaceful. There ended up being police presence. So I left right after the protest ended.
Mm-hmm. And so you have this personal experience, having grown up with a close connection to Hong Kong and seeing the anti-democracy policies of China and taking mm-hmm. part in these protests. I imagine that all of that plays through your mind when you think about the Olympics mm-hmm. coming up. First off, do you typically watch the Olympics, and how do you feel about them in general?
Yes, I do watch the Olympics. I usually watch the summer and the winter ones. And with the upcoming Olympics, considering, you know, everything that you just summarized, you know, I'm not going to watch the Olympics this year. I just think that what the Communist Chinese Party is doing is not right. And I mean, this reminds me of 2008 when Beijing hosted the Summer Olympics. And there was a lot going on, especially with the Tibetans in Tibet and also the Uyghurs in Xinjiang. And this year, the Communist Chinese Party is warning athletes not to speak about politics, which is quite alarming. Like, yes, come to our city, but don't talk about politics, which doesn't make sense to me.
So you mentioned China's warning, and that came in the form of a statement from Yang Xu, Deputy Director mm-hmm. General of International Relations for the Beijing Organizing Committee, who said this week, quote, any behavior or speech that is against the Olympic spirit, especially against the Chinese laws and regulations, are also subject to certain punishment. So for you, that spells problems and potential conflict with your values.
Yeah, exactly. And thank you so much for reading that quote, because it really goes back to what was happening in 2019 with the Hong Kong protests and how the chief executive of Hong Kong, Carrie Lam, pretty much said the same thing when she and her executive council, along with the legislative council in Hong Kong, the governing bodies, passed the sweeping law, the national security law, in 2020. And anything that goes against the Chinese Communist Party or even the Hong Kong SAR government, the Special Administrative Region government, you're subject to punishment. And with the Hong Kong's national security law, any citizen of the world can get punished. And if you land in Hong Kong or in China, you're subject to punishment.
We know that athletes have received this warning. Human Rights Watch has also advised athletes to not speak out politically because of the potential harm that could befall them from the government in Beijing. When you think about the position of athletes who are competing in these games, these are folks who have trained, obviously, for most of their lives for a sport that usually doesn't have a world stage, and they happen to be of an age and of a competition level that the Beijing Olympics is their stage, is their opportunity. Do you sympathize with the position that they're in and the athletes who are, for the most part, choosing to go ahead and compete?
That's a really good question. And my answer is I don't sympathize with them because they're being complicit in what is happening politically. While I understand that they've trained all their life, they need to consider the state of affairs, especially with U.S.-China relations. And, you know, in particular, in the U.S. context, the athletes who are still choosing to go to the Winter 2022 Olympics in Beijing, it just really makes me question, like, where's their nationalism with the U.S.? It's like, you know, President Biden said there won't be like a political presence with the 2022 Olympics in Beijing, but athletes are still permitted to go, which kind of confuses me.
Yeah, you're talking about this diplomatic boycott where there's not going to be the pomp and circumstance won't happen, but athletes are still going, you know, U.S. Olympic Committee officials will go. You just won't see like the vice president show up at a figure skating competition. And to you, it sounds like that's a hollow gesture.
I'm really, really concerned about the athletes that are participating and representing the U.S. It's like if they speak out of line or if they even cross this political line, that they're going to get in severe trouble, and who's going to be there to help them out if they do speak out against what Beijing is, you know, the Olympic Committee in Beijing or China in general classifies as, you know, political talk that is not allowed.
You mentioned nationalism, and, you know, I feel that some would put themselves in the shoes of these athletes and say they're going, they are trying to compete for a medal for their country. They are being patriotic in their own way.
As I said before, they're being complicit in regard to what is happening with the human rights injustices and violations in China and what the Communist Chinese Party is doing. And it's just really upsetting for me because while I understand their position, like they've been training all their life, but you need to look at the optics and like the political welfare between the U.S. and China. And I see where these athletes are coming from, but there's a bright line. There's a line that should not be crossed.
It really feels like what we're talking about here in a wider sense is how to be a good person in the world. And it feels like such a personal decision, but I can tell that you feel very strongly about the...
Yeah, and I'm so glad you asked this question about being a good person. And this really goes back to, you know, when I was young, like an eighth grader, I tuned in and I watched the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing because I was oblivious. I was complicit to what was happening in Tibet and Xinjiang with the Uyghurs, the Muslim people over there. And now it's like with the heightened awareness, it's like, isn't it quite bleak what it means to be a good person? Like the Chinese Communist Party is doing all these horrific things. There's news all about it. You can just go on your phone. You can go on Google. You can search for tweets on Twitter. So, you know, where I fall is, yeah, to be a good person, why don't you boycott the 2022 Olympics? Because these bad things are happening to people just like you and me. And this could be you, too.
Alex Tang is a teacher at Seattle Community College, and he was also active in organizing supporting demonstrations for the pro-democracy movement in Hong Kong. Coming up on Soundside, what about when you're the athlete putting in a ton of time and effort to compete in these Olympic Games? More in our conversation about the Winter Olympic Games in Beijing, to watch or not to watch. On the other side of this break, back with more Soundside in a second.
KUOW Seattle. Astronomers in Australia say they've discovered an object in our galaxy that's unlike anything they've ever seen before. You'll hear a lot more about it today during BBC NewsHour, which begins at 1 o'clock, right after Soundside.
Support for KUOW comes from Puget Sound Energy, committed to helping families affected by COVID-19 get through difficult times. Details and more information about PSE's programs for assisting in-need customers at pse.com.
Hi, I'm Libby Denkman, and you're listening to Soundside. Today we are talking about the Winter Olympic Games starting in Beijing next week. While the U.S. is still sending athletes, there won't be a political delegation headed to the Games this year. The Biden administration says that's in protest of human rights abuses by the Chinese government. So we're getting different perspectives on this question. Should we watch the Beijing Olympic Games? Here to discuss is Libby Ludlow, 2006 Olympic alpine skier, and nowadays Libby is a leadership consultant and children's book author. I don't get to say this much, Libby, so hi, welcome to Soundside. We are name twins, and this is very exciting.
I know, very rare on my end as well, so this is fun.
Well, let's get some background first before we tackle the philosophical questions, bigger ones. Put us in the boots of an Olympic skier who is prepping to go to the Games. What was your life like as you got ready to go to the 2006 Games?
Well, it was obviously years of buildup for me personally. I had had a season-ending injury 10 months prior that my surgeon told me was potentially career-ending. So for me, the 10 months leading up to it were hundreds, if not thousands of hours, grinding out in the gym and working hard to get my body back and ready. And that season ended up being my best season competing on the World Cup circuit. So I was getting top 10 results and was able to qualify for the Olympic team in one of the eras when women's ski racing was really, really strong. So for me to kind of like have the culmination of my dream happen after a setback that really put into question whether it would be possible. Just being there was like pure elation, and it's a true honor. You hear it a lot, but it is an honor to represent your country and to have the world's eyes kind of at your stage, which is kind of rare, when everybody's actually watching a winter sport. It's they're not the most widely watched sports.
Yeah, alpine skiing, that's really when a wider audience would tune in, just the Olympic Games. Did you face any criticism when you went to the Torino Games at all? I think that this political conversation has been developing and growing over the years about, for example, the Olympics are generally not a great deal for host cities. They are expensive. They kind of displace people in many cases. But at the time in 2006, do you remember there being a wider political conversation about the Olympics?
Not at all, actually. I have zero memory of any of those concerns that you listed. I know, nothing was on my radar that was potentially controversial. It was kind of focused solely on the competition, and my family was able to come over, so that was different and exciting and another element to kind of juggle in my kind of mental game. But other than that, that was all that was on my radar.
And as an athlete, I mean, you have to really have blinders on to be able to have that sort of superhuman focus in a sport like alpine skiing. Even more, it's life or death whether you're really focused on what you're doing. What about the coverage of this year's games? I'm sure you have been listening to our conversation so far and hearing about the ways that the U.S. is trying to walk this line of having the diplomatic boycott but sending athletes because of human rights abuses in China. What do you feel like watching this as a former Olympic athlete and the position, your perspective on the position that these athletes are in going to Beijing?
Yeah, I have the perspective of a spectator who happens to be a really big fan of the Olympics, but also as an athlete, putting myself in their shoes, I feel sorry for them in a lot of ways that they have these kind of added concerns layered onto their plate as they go over there to compete. I guess it was a luxury to only focus on my competition when I was competing in the Olympics. But for them, they have these other concerns. And the athlete's job is really to be able to tune out distractions. So really, I think it'll actually end up benefiting the more mature and experienced athletes who are able to kind of like divorce and isolate all of the issues and politics that are going on around them to be able to focus on their competition. Maybe it'll play out that way, but primarily, you know, as an athlete, and particularly as a winter athlete, you only have a small window, at least for many of the sports, not all of them, but a small window of time when your body is at its peak form. And so when the Olympics are only every 4 years, for many of these athletes, these Beijing Olympics are going to be their shot, whether it's the only Olympics they go to or the only Olympics that they'll go to when they're kind of in peak physical form or practice. And so it's just such a special, rare opportunity for them to get to compete on the world stage at the Olympics, and obviously have been working for years to get there. So, I mean, I just can't even imagine having to make a decision about whether or not to compete or kind of how to weigh the different political considerations that are present for them right now.
How will this affect the way that you watch the Olympics this year? And what do you hope people who are making that decision of whether to watch or not to watch keep in mind?
Yeah, I think that taking the athlete's perspective and considering what they deserve is one thing. You know, I think that that's an element, but it's also a small percentage of the world population, those athletes that are going to compete. I get that. So from my perspective, when I look at the Olympic Games, I just see it as an occasion where the whole world is convening for peaceful purposes. And it feels like, to me, it may be one of the like few, if not only, occasions when the world is actually, you know, gathering together and doing something that doesn't have to do with conflict or politics or judgment. And I find a lot of inspiration in that. So even if the general spectator may not be able to relate to an athlete hurling themselves down the mountain in a skin-tight suit at 80 miles per hour, I think a lot of people can relate to the experience of working really hard towards something and getting knocked down and having setbacks and fighting to get through and to achieve a goal. And I think everybody can relate to that, regardless of background, socioeconomic class and ethnicity. We can all relate to that. And so for me, I feel like the world actually deserves to have this one positive occasion that we can all actually look to for inspiration. After all, the Olympic values are excellence, respect, and friendship. I mean, if we can look to all of that demonstration of courage and effort and passion and remarkable athleticism and all in their purest form, we have an opportunity to draw inspiration from that. And I think that our world could really benefit from that right now.
Libby Ludlow is a 2006 Olympic alpine skier and a leadership consultant and children's book author. Thank you very much for joining this conversation and sharing your perspective as we are all thinking about the politics of this Beijing Winter Olympics.
Thanks for covering the topic.
Here on Soundside, we have a listener network that we welcome you to join at kow.org/soundside. And we got some listener reaction to our topic today. One from Christopher, who wrote in, quote, "I don't understand who would not watch the Winter Olympics. Why wouldn't you? We're willing to buy all our goods made in China without a pause. Not watching the games based on politics or human rights is nothing more than virtue signaling and just pointless. Lily wrote in to say, I think during a pandemic it is irresponsible. I understand that it's not fair to athletes, but what is going on in the world right now isn't fair to anyone. And Leo said, we are supporting our athletes in the competition of their lives. The games should never have been awarded to Beijing in the first place, and it is not the athletes' fault that it was. Thank you to everyone who wrote in from our listener network. We love hearing from you. Again, we have a texting group that you can join at kow.org/soundside. Overall, 66 of you said that you would be skipping watching the games. 30 of you said you will be watching, and we hope to hear more as the games unfold. Back with more Soundside after this break.